But first this morning, King Lear is coming to the Gate Theatre, and taking on the lead role of the King is Conleth Hill. Some of you will know him from many, many stage roles, including Stones in His Pockets, and some of you will be fans of his work in Game of Thrones, Suits and Holding. Conleth Hill, it's great to see you here in studio. Thanks for coming.
Thanks very much for having me.
Now, I have to tell my listeners here this morning, your beautiful dog is with you.
Yes, we're not mentioning her name because we don't want her in the business.
Of course, you're shy about her.
Well, yeah, I just, you know, when she's old enough, she can make her own mind up. But for now, we'll keep her anonymous.
She's only 2.5.
She is, and she's great company.
Can we say what breed she is?
Well, not specifically, but her dad was King Charles with a bit of cocker, and her mum was a short-legged Jack Russell. I nearly said Jack Daniels.
That would be an unusual dog.
Yes, very unusual.
But you got her from another great actor.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, the lovely Charlene McKenna and I, who've worked together many times, we were in Budapest, weirdly, filming Vienna Blood, and we were up a big wheel. And she turned around and asked me, would I take a pup? And I said I would if she had a wee girl, but I didn't really want a boy. So Charlene and Adam, her husband, hand-reared her for 8 weeks before I got her.
Beautiful doggy.
Yeah.
Now, look, you're deep in rehearsals at the moment. When you were asked to take on King Lear, what did you think? I mean, did you always want to give it a go or not?
No, I'd never. It's like most things that I've been offered, I wouldn't have thought of them. But I think that when you are offered something like that, you do have to think seriously about it. And I went, do you know, when I get older, I might not be fit to do it. I mightn't be here. So, you know, I'll grab the chance while I have it, and love working at the Gate. So it was a no brainer.
They probably have to age you up, though.
Not as much as you would think, but thank you very much. No, not that much. He's, you know, sadly, I'm old.
Is it amazing that King Lear is still so relevant hundreds of years on? I mean, what is it about the play, and I suppose about Shakespeare? It's extraordinary, actually.
I think it's him. I think he just has such a brilliant observation of the human condition and all its various prisms. And you know, he writes so many brilliant parts, and yet they're not similar at all. He's, you know, like Hamlet's nothing like Macbeth's, like nothing like Lear. All those characters and just such accurate accounts of human emotion. And that doesn't change, I suppose. Everything else might change, but we still hate and love and get angry and et cetera, as we did then. And he noted it so well.
Do you get reaction from people when you say you're now about to do King Lear? Like maybe even people who remember it from school and either loved it or really didn't love it?
No, not really. But I wouldn't really be going around with a sandwich board or anything, you know. Or it wouldn't really be my topic of conversation. It was very frightening, and it's a huge challenge. But the few that I told, a couple went, oh my God, that's hard.
You're deadly focused, other people have said to me, when you're rehearsing, and particularly something like this. So how do you go about rehearsing to be King Lear?
Well, you need to get the sense of what you're saying first. There's no point in you opening your mouth and speaking if you haven't a clue what you're talking about. And then I think it's just a matter of, you never learn anything in stone, because you go into rehearsals with other people and they have things to bring as well. So I would be focused in terms of, I'd be quite monastic and quite studious, and but it's not a big hardship. You know, I've been socially isolating since the 80s, so it's no big deal. But I do enjoy the work. I enjoy using the brain, and you would have to do it more probably for theatre than you would for television. Television's like a soft floppy disk or something where you can erase it for the next days. Scenes, whereas theatre you're doing it 8 times a week.
When you say you've been socially isolating since the 80s,
yeah,
what do you mean by that?
Well, when not the 80s maybe, but supposedly Game of Thrones, you know, I'm not going out to pubs at night because I can deal with people during the day, but when somebody gets drunk and is sent over by their mates to kind of go, you're an actor. And then you have to go through your whole CV, which is just, you know, not not there. So, you know, I wouldn't be. Well, you get older anyway, you go out less, I think. It's just normal.
I suppose Game of Thrones was so huge. How did that come about?
I resisted it for a long time, relatively, in that they were casting for the pilot, and my agent at the time kept saying, go and meet them, just go and meet them. And I kept saying, no, I don't want to do wizards and princesses. And it sounded all very, you know, very, very fantasy to me. And then I met the two showrunners, and it was a brilliant director was attached to the pilot at the time. So he, Tom McCarthy. And so I thought they were great, but I auditioned for a different part, didn't get it.
Which part did you audition for?
It was for Robert Baratheon, who was played so brilliantly by Mark Addy. And I remember them saying, right, well, it's not going to work for Robert, but we have other parts if we go to series and we will be back. And I thought, that's BS, but it's a nice BS. So, and then I got this amazing role.
An amazing role, Varys. He lasted many, many, many years. I mean, they only killed you off in the very end, didn't they?
I know. They've literally hired and fired me twice because the next series they did was Three Body, and I played a pope in that who got fried by the sun. So I don't know what it is about me, but they like hiring and firing me.
What is it, do you think, about Game of Thrones that made it so huge? And did you love your time in it?
I loved the first five seasons, and then I've publicly stated that, you know, I didn't enjoy the arc of the character so much in the last two series. But I've also said that that's just a hazard of being in a multi-character piece. But yes, by and large, I loved it. It was life-changing financially. Mm. The fact that it was filmed, you know, like an hour away from where I live and sometimes even closer was such a bonus. So, I've no regrets about it at all. But and the great thing was I don't look very much like my character.
No.
And so that would always be my aspiration is, you know, it's fine if the characters are famous.
Yeah.
But they can have that fame. I'm not interested, you know.
Because you had a shaved head, obviously, for Varys, but I'm looking at you now, which is appropriate for King Lear, and you've a great head of hair.
Thanks very much.
And a beard. So did you mind having to shave your head?
Only the first time. I remember crying the first time.
Really?
Well, I'd never had my head shaved in my life. And it was a bit like a baby's posterior after denappying. And I just remember Rory McCann, who played the Hound, coming along and saying, what's wrong with you? And I said, oh, I've just sold my soul to HBO. And he said, expletive up and think of your pension. So after that, it was fine. I just shaved it every summer and it grew back, you know, in between.
It was amazing for Northern Ireland as well, wasn't it, though? Because even now, it's one of the biggest tourist attractions, like, in Europe.
Yeah, I think particularly for the North Coast, which, for whatever reason, wasn't pushed so much. It's suddenly, the fact that it filmed Ballantoy and Murlock Bay and Cushion Dun and Fairhead, it just, people went, where is that? We want to see there, which no tourist ad had ever been able to capture before. I think the golf helped as well, weirdly. The Open being on, you know, around that time in Portrush. But it is a beautiful part of the world, so, you know, it's a bit more crowded now, but I'll live with it.
And the lovely thing is, you've always remained living in Ballycastle, haven't you? Like, no matter how many roles you do in different parts of the world, your base and your home is Ballycastle.
Yeah, I think it's important to do a job as much as you can in such an arbitrary business on your own terms. So, like, as soon as I finished drama school, I came straight back to Belfast and started working there. And then I kind of realised, well, I'm going every... I would go to Scotland to work or I would go somewhere else. And I kind of thought, well, I may as well live where I want to live and go where the work is rather than live in London and not be able to afford to live, et cetera, et cetera. So I was very lucky. It's home. It's just like... I've been other places equally as beautiful, but there's something about it was instilled in this by our parents, and I like the fact that you kind of knew everybody. I found London very anonymous and would watch documentaries about poor Irish single men in their 60s being found with their head stuck to a mattress after 3 weeks and going, oh, I want to go home. I don't want to die on my own here. So, just nice to have people you love around you.
It's also interesting you talk about it because I often speak to people here in the South and not that many still go to that magnificent part of the northern coast. It's amazing. People tend to go south and west here.
Yeah, a lot more than you would imagine. I mean, I remember doing Holding and we were doing a beach scene. And I was in the house changing, and the woman in the house who owned the house said, "Oh, we were just up in Ballycastle at the weekend." Now, wow. Like when we were kids, my father would drive us down to Killarney, you know, for holidays or Yall or, you know, down that. But that was before any motorways or anything. Now it's not as long a journey.
Yeah.
But I think more do come up now than you'd be surprised. I see lots of southern plates around the place. Yeah.
It's great to hear,
actually. Yeah, yeah.
Tell me about your parents. Your dad himself, he was a very well-known BBC News cameraman, wasn't he? Tell me about your parents.
Yeah, Patsy was my father, Patsy Hill, MBE. And he worked for the BBC for freelance for years during the worst of the Troubles. And he would have retired in the mid-90s, I think. And then he died in 2001. But he was a great sort of example of how to tell a story without bias. And so I would kind of approach my work that way as well, that it's not about you telling your story through something, it's about you telling that story. And I don't think he would have lasted 2 minutes in drama, but they were hard drinkers. There was no counselling, there was no backup for things that they saw. You know, they would have seen as bad things as the emergency services and had to cover it and also be a huge part of it, you know, as in they all had histories and backgrounds, and they just did an amazing job of getting that news out. And yeah, so lots of admiration for him. And my mum was the school secretary in my primary school, St Patrick's and St Bridget's. Yeah, so just an idyllic childhood and great parents, and just grateful to have had them, you know.
That's so lovely to hear.
Well, I think, you know, I don't have a significant other. I've never had anybody else. So they were everything to me, and just blessed to have had them, and blessed to have had the circumstances to be working close to them when, you know, my dad was different. I was in New York when he was dying, but my mama was there, so I'd kind of lived with her for the last 18 years of her life. Mm. And the jobs allowed me to stay there more than I probably would have otherwise, so it was great.
Were they worried initially when you were becoming an actor?
Oh, ridiculously worried. Well, my father hated any of us leaving home at all. You know, I remember my sister going to an interview in Manchester for art college, and I said I'd fly over with her, thinking I was doing everybody a favour. And he rang me up and went, "Traitor," and put the phone down because he just hated us. He wanted us all around him all the time. So it was hard to, you know, you kind of, sometimes you were like, "Oh, God, could you not make this easier?" Because in reality, I didn't want to go away.
Mm.
But you had to. Then there was no drama school down here. There was none in Belfast. So if you wanted to train, you had to go over the water. But I remember him sending John Hewitt, the lovely actor, in to check up on me, to make sure that I was all right, and then he could report. He drank in the BBC club with my dad, so he could report back to him that I was getting on all right. So
the lyric has been so important, hasn't it? In the light of so many of successful Northern Irish actors like yourself, Liam Neeson, loads of people,
yeah.
Kieran Hines.
Yeah, yeah, it was an amazing beacon all through those terrible years as well. It was very interesting that when the handshake between Queen Elizabeth and Martin McGuinness, that's where it was staged, for want of a better word, because it was one of the most neutral buildings in the city, you know.
Yeah.
And all kinds of everybody always worked there. It didn't seem to be a factor, but in fairness, it wasn't a factor for most people up there, you know.
Mm.
They get on with their lives. But yeah, and just an amazing, I mean, the 90s up there, late 80s, early 90s were an amazing time. And there were so many little independent theatre companies that were doing brilliant work and brilliant play readings and educating actors. And we all kind of lived around the Lower Ormo area. And so it was a great time. And, you know, both the peace process was ramping up as well. So a very positive time. And yeah.
Of course, your big break, I think, wasn't it, was Mary Jones, and Ian McElhenney, you're still very friendly with her actor husband, but it was her play.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Stones, wasn't it? Tell us about that.
That sounds like I've fallen out with Mary.
No.
Me
I
and
know
Ian
you
get
still
on great,
her.
But I don't speak to her at all.
Just like her plays.
Yeah, I do. I love that. Well, she was in a company called Sharabang, which as a young, I was at art college at the time, but used to go and see their productions, just be blown away by the honesty of it and the reality of it. And it kind of runs through her work, you know, whether she knows it or not, because the whole point of Stones and His Pockets was stop telling our story, Americans or English people, and getting it so wrong. Let us tell our own stories. And yet the reality is nobody gives a very much of a thought about whether we think an accent's right or wrong because we're such a small part of the market. She's just a great, honest writer. And I had done a good few plays with her before Stones came along. And it was first done in 96 with Tim Murphy from Tralee and myself. And then did a little tour of Ireland. And then when I got to the Lyric, they said, is there anything you want to do? And I thought we should look at it again. It was a great piece. And so that's the production with Sean Campion that Ian directed that went everywhere.
And won lots of awards.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
You too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And as you say, you're still very close friends with Mary Jones and Ian, her husband.
Both of them.
He, of course, played the fab grumpy granddad in Derry Girls.
Yes.
And he was in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Is it great to work with people you know so well, like your Northern Irish, just the shorthand for knowing each other?
It's effortless, yeah, yeah. Mm. But I probably have worked with him more than on stage and film and TV. I think he was in Patch of Fog as well, played my agent in it. So, yeah, he's just... And he's a good director as well. He just, there's somebody who's been doing it for a long time.
I think it's really interesting as well, though, because a couple of times in this interview, you don't want all the fame of acting. Like you said, you don't like that side of your career.
Well, I think it's more that a lot of people assume that we all want to run towards the camera with our arms open, but. No, I like losing myself, not particularly method or anything, but just telling the story I'm being paid to tell rather than my story.
King Lear is daunting. So
yeah.
Do you feel, not the hand of history, but do you feel when you play somebody like King Lear, an added responsibility or not?
Not really. I just think you feel lucky that that's it's still there and it's still in circulation and that people still want you to work. And I feel blessed to be surrounded with an amazing company who are just doing an amazing job and the gate, looking after us all. So it's, and it's not just about Lear. There's so many stories in there.
And you've a great director in Roxana Silbert as well, haven't you?
Yeah, she's fantastic and, just so easy to work with.
Now, since you bring your dog, who shall remain anonymous, everywhere, will she be going to the gate too when you're on stage? And if so, where shall she be waiting and watching it?
While we've been rehearsing, she's had a part-time job with the wardrobe department.
Excellent.
So she goes up there every morning. And then if I'm doing a run or can't get, I'll get up at lunchtime and take her for a walk. And then if I'm doing a run, they'll feed her at 4 o'clock. And then we walk home. So she's a working girl.
Well, we love your dog. And listen, Conal Hill, thanks so much for coming into our studio this morning here in Donnybrook.
Welcome.
King Lear runs in the Gate Theatre from February the 21st to April the 27th. Tickets, gatetheatre.ie. And I know it's just going to be brilliant. Thanks so much for being my guest this morning,
From your mouth
Conal.
To God's ears. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Conal.
Cheers.